Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:50 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 27th. Well, we've only got a couple of days left in the half of the year, and so far the S&P 500 is up about 1.36% and the Nasdaq Composite is up about 8%. But everything else is in negative territory. And when we look at particularly the right-hand column on the WEI page on Bloomberg, we can see that China's down 15%, Switzerland's down 11%, the Swedish market's down 10%, and the Brazilian market's down 21% on a currency-adjusted basis. That is a picture of just how much currencies have moved in the last 6 months, and it tells us as well where the focus of attention is likely to be. Well, there is the potential that we're going to get a little bit of a rally into the last 2 days of the half, so that quarterly figures will look slightly better, but there's no guarantee of that. And when we look at, for example, the Dow Jones, then the market was up approximately 150 points off the open and then is closing in negative territory, down about 120. So this continues to be a corrective environment. Perhaps more importantly than that, it has broken its progression of higher reaction lows. The S&P 500 has also come back to test its progression of higher reaction lows. This is an area where, if support's going to be found and this sequence of trading higher is going to be sustained, well, it would be very handy if it started to find support in this area. The Nasdaq, on the other hand, had broken out to new highs, and now it is closing below 7,000. Well, 7,000 has been an area of resistance back in January and in March, and now it is closing below that level, suggesting that we are going to have some profit taking. Now, the Nasdaq has got more room in which to consolidate and still be above the trend mean than those other indices. But, of course, it will have to demonstrate that it can indeed find support. Then you have the Russell 2000, which is pulling back in a dynamic manner this week, and it also has room in which to consolidate, most particularly above its previous high, but also above the trend mean. So it does look increasingly likely that that is what we're going to have. But it's also worth highlighting that the dollar is quite firm, and that's putting pressure on just about everything else. The euro was down today by almost a full cent, and that is, I think, rather pivotal, because it's confirming resistance in the region of the trend mean from a couple of weeks ago. It's now back at a closing low, in fact, for the week. And very simply, Europe needs a weaker currency more than the US does at this particular time. But if we think about weak currencies, the euro is not the weakest currency out there. The Hungarian forint moved to a new low against the euro in here today. It's been accelerating lower over the last few weeks. And of course, this is also the site of a populist uprising, where you have Orban really preaching an Islamophobic message and an anti-immigrant message to go with it. Well, certainly what we're seeing is that the forint is taking the brunt of that pressure. But it's also, I think, worth highlighting that it had been inert versus the euro, not least because there had been hopes, however foggy, that the forint might eventually be substituted for the euro. Well, that does not look particularly likely, given the kind of action that we're getting right now. When we look at then the Czech koruna, and let me put that up there, well, that is also starting to deteriorate, and it's back above. The dollar is back above the trend mean here as well. The Russian ruble has been, I think, distributing above, or the dollar has been consolidating above the trend mean, probably the better way to say it, and it does look like we're going to see additional upside for the dollar here as well. I think the most important characteristic is that the dollar had been trending lower for a couple of years, and now we're seeing that being unwound. I've been rather leery of the ability of the real to hold that low around 4, and the real was down in a rather dynamic manner. And of course, then you have big currencies that are particularly weak, like the Chinese renminbi. It was again weaker in here today. So this is consecutive days on the downside. One, two, 8 days on the downside so far, and there is no sign that this decline has been arrested. That is having a knock-on effect for the H shares index, and that is down now 2 consecutive weeks, and this has been a clear break of trend. It is now infecting the Hang Seng index, and that is now breaking below and extending the move below the trend mean. I think it is worth looking at the Hang Seng on a longer basis because it had moved to a new all-time high and is now failing at that level. So, and we also know that because Hong Kong has got the peg to the US dollar, that it also has to have its interest rates. And with interest rates rising and the Hong Kong dollar peg testing the upper limits of the band, well, what that also tells us is that the Hong Kong Monetary Authority is going to have to be spending more of its reserves to defend the peg, and that's likely to represent a contraction in terms of the Hong Kong economy. Well, that is, I think, weighing not just on Hong Kong listed shares, but there continues to be this deterioration in China. And certainly, China has lowered its reserve requirements for the banks, but the banks sector generally is not firm. When you not just when you look at the Chinese market, the FTSE China A600 Banks Index was down by an additional 200 points in here today. It's now picking up pace on the downside. Then, if we look at the outlook for European banks, the Euro Stoxx Banks Index was again in negative territory today. It was off its low, but I think it is worth looking at the constituents of that index and their relative performance. That it's the Italian banks and the Spanish banks, and indeed Deutsche Bank, which are leading on the downside. Deutsche Bank is one of only two German banks that are still listed, and this is still a really well-defined downtrend. Commerzbank, which had been rallying pretty impressively last year, has pretty much given up the whole thing. And if we look at that perhaps on a more like a 3 year basis, we can see that it's well, it hasn't given up all of its decline, but it's certainly trending lower in a reasonably consistent environment. And there is nothing on the chart to say that it's due anything other than some steadying within the context of a decline that is medium term in nature. What we also saw today was JP Morgan broke lower, and the S&P 500 Banks Index has been holding on in the region of the trend mean for much of the last few weeks, but it is now breaking down. Now, the whole rationale for why US banks should be doing better was tied to the outlook for interest rates. It was tied to the fact that they were passing their stress tests and that they would be able to pay higher dividends, and also to the view that the US economy was in rude health, and that that would also benefit the banking sector. Well, the possibility of trade wars is going to weigh on international banks. So, JP Morgan was coming down today. Wells Fargo, on the other hand, is an entirely US-oriented bank, and of course it has had its own range of issues, and there are certainly ads on the radio professing that they're relaunching themselves after their 150-year history, and that everything is they're going to be crossing their T's and dotting their I's and being very friendly to customers in the future. But well, I don't think people are going to be wooed so easily. But the one point that it does have in its favor is that it has no international exposure to speak of. Citigroup, on the other hand, is one of the most international of all the banks in the US, and it was not able to hold its advance in here today, and it has been deteriorating over the course of this downtrend from the high that we saw in January. Now, this is, I think, important to highlight. This is one of the reasons I'm spending so much time talking about the banks, is that banks are liquidity providers. Bull markets thrive on liquidity. If banks are deteriorating, it suggests that financial conditions are getting tighter, and financial conditions are getting tighter. Interest rates are rising, the size of the Fed's balance sheet is contracting, and high yield spreads in Europe are rising. The size of the Fed's balance sheet is having an I think a rather profound effect on the outlook for central bank assets generally. When we look at the total assets in central bank balance sheets, they continue to contract. They're now below 20 trillion. What that does in an environment where the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet, the ECB is expecting to end its purchase program in September. Although personally, I think that that is only likely to represent a hiatus. That they're probably in an environment where the Fed was probably 3 or 4 years ago. If we look at everything that has happened within the EU, everything that they're doing is basically mirroring what the Fed did with approximately a 3 or 4 year lag. It means that they're probably going to be lured back into quantitative easing and with an open-ended program similar to QE3. And I think that that's the most likely scenario, but not yet. They're probably going to have to end their quantitative easing program first, and then notice that the error of their ways, and then be encouraged back into the quantitative easing circus. In the meantime, Japan is continuing to increase the size of its balance sheet. The Nikkei index has been reasonably steady over the course of the last few weeks, but the banking sector is well has not been immune from some of the selling pressure we've seen elsewhere, but it is not coming down in nearly the same fashion. And part of the reason for that is because the Bank of Japan is still engaged in quantitative easing, and really shows no sign of ending. And the dollar remains really quite firm against the yen and is trading back above 110. So that throws the onus for the balance of global monetary policy onto China. And the extent to which China is willing to ease is likely to be an arbiter in exactly what happens with the liquidity situation for the globe. Capital is both global and mobile, so if it is created in China, it will find a way to seep out into the rest of the world. What I find particularly interesting is that there are headlines that are really running around the world right now saying that that the FANG stocks are not immune to the selling pressure, but they're not coming down in a particularly dramatic fashion either. Apple, for example, was in positive territory today. Google, having got all the way back up to test its peak, has been consolidating, and it was in negative territory today, but it's got a lot of room in which to consolidate. And I think that certainly there is a whiff of risk off coming back into this market. But the reality is that when you look at Netflix, for example, that it paused around 300 and now it's pausing around 400. It also paused below 200 and it ranged around 100. So it's not at all surprising that we get some pause and consolidation around the $400 level, and it may pull back more than that. Netflix doesn't have any business in China, and it's pretty immune to trade wars. So is Amazon and Google and Facebook. So that suggests that people are selling them because they're worried about the impact on the wider economy, and they're worried about the deterioration in other parts of their portfolios. Well, Facebook, having got up to $200, another big psychological round number, was in negative territory today, and we may see some additional consolidation. But that is not where the focus of risk is. Then, one area that has been under some pressure has been the consumer staples sector. And when we look at the consumer staples sector, well, the yield on the government bonds is not pushing above the 3% level, but a lot of these consumer companies, have big international businesses. Well, people had been buying them between 2009 and 2017 because they had big international businesses and the global economy was growing and that their dividends had bond-like characteristics. Well, they started selling them at the beginning of this year because of those bond-like characteristics and bond yields were rising. Now people are getting a bit leery of them because of their big international businesses and their disparate dependence on the Chinese market and the risk of trade wars. And I think that is most particularly the case for some of the what I would consider fast food operations. Starbucks, for example, has type 3 top formation characteristics, and it was in negative territory again today, and it is trading below the $50 area. So there is significant potential for additional downside here, and not least because they've lost their iconic CEO, which doesn't seem to be getting a lot of notice from analysts on Wall Street, but it is certainly the case that their CEO was the person who built the company, and his absence is going to be felt in this what looks like a rather crisis period. Well, McDonald's sells a lot of burgers in the U.S., but it also sells them in China. And you had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in January, and now we're starting to see some of right-hand extension and potentially this progression of higher reaction lows get broken. So there is type 2 top formation characteristics in here. Well, when we look at Yum China, that is an American brand that completely hived off its Chinese operation, and it's been trending lower since January, and it was down in negative territory in here today. But what that also means is that Yum itself it has been holding up better, and even that is below its trend mean right now. But of course, Yum itself has no Chinese exposure since it was able to hive off that Chinese business. What I think right now is happening is that you're getting some indiscriminate selling, you're getting some indiscriminate profit taking from things that had been doing particularly well. And what that's going to create are buying opportunities. Well, there is the additional consideration that there are a number of consumer companies had got to rather impressive yields. Campbell Soup, for example, had got up to 4%, and every time it got up to a yield of about 3.5% since really the early 1990s, it had been a buy. Well, right now there is speculation that it isn't simply going to be a buy by investors, but that it could be taken over by Kraft Heinz. And the share got all the way up to test the region of the trend mean. It's probably going to need some additional fuel to really help to support the market following this pullback that we've had in here today. But the only reason I mention it is that when we get these consumer-oriented shares coming back up towards these historic levels where investors got interested in them once more, then people will start to look at what's going on in the bond market. And yields are currently coming back down towards the 2.8% level. Well, when yields were pushing through 3%, then the 3% you're getting in a consumer-oriented dividend company is probably not that attractive. But if you're getting 3.5% when yields are at 2.8%, well, that 70 basis points looks to be a bit more attractive from an investor's perspective. And that is the kind of situation that should help to support these shares over the medium term. That if they can demonstrate that you have this yield pickup from the because of their bond-like characteristics, well, that could be something that is worth investor interest to come through on. But if we have a pressure in the bond markets, or well, sorry, pressure in the banking sector, and pressure in stock markets coming through from the trade war rhetoric, and the underperformance of emerging markets because of the strength of the US dollar. But I think it is particularly interesting to highlight some of the currencies that have been trending lower, not just for this year, but for years. Because the Philippine peso has been trending lower since 2013, and it's at a new high in here today. The Turkish lira has been trending lower against the dollar in a consistent manner for years. And despite the fact that the dollar was particularly weak for the last 2 years, it continued to go lower. The Argentine peso is another example of that, and the economy has slipped back into recession. The Brazilian real again falls into this resurgent dollar category, considering the kind of trouble the economy is in right now, when the dollar has really only been rallying for the last 4 or 5 months, is really not a particularly encouraging sign, considering that it's not at all unusual to see rallies in currency markets that can last a couple of years. And generally speaking, medium-term trends in currencies don't last more than a couple years or maybe 3 years, because then they start to become problems for central banks. Well, the Indian rupee has been ranging below the 69 area for the last 2 years, and arguably since 2013. And it moved on to new recovery highs. The dollar moved on to new recovery highs in here today. Well, the RBI has raised interest rates once, but when, for example, we look at the Indian bond market, and the reality is that the yield right now is at about 7.8%. Well, that's just not attractive enough from the perspective of global investors. If we go back and look at 2013, the last time we had the yield this, or excuse me, the currency this low, the yield was closer to 9.5%. So, interest rates in the U.S., for example, have not risen so very much in that time that India could be justified at having such a narrow spread, and that is part of the risk that's outstanding here. There is the potential that Modi is going to try and buy the election, and that could have an impact on inflation, which is having an impact on the currency, and it's also likely to have a deleterious effect on the bond market. Well, part of the reason too that the Indian rupee is coming under pressure is because it's a major oil importer. And West Texas Intermediate was up in a dynamic manner today and just about managed to post a new recovery high. Well, it has raced to get from the lower side of the range up to these levels this week. So we are potentially in for some pause in consolidation, but it's a pretty impressive reassertion of the medium-term demand-dominated environment. And in a weak currency environment with a strong oil price, that's not particularly benign for India. Brent crude was perhaps not quite as strong, and the spread between the two contracts is now contracting. But in rupees, if we look at the oil price over, for example, the last 5 years, well, it has been curtailed in terms of its rally for much of 2016 and 2017 because of the relative strength of the rupee. But now with the rupee over the last 12 months weakening again, this is not particularly good news for India. And it suggests that, and again, we're not back at the highs that the oil price was at back in 2000 or in 2013 or 14. And it's a testament to how much pressure some of these markets are under that the dollar hasn't been rallying for that long, and commodity prices are not at the peaks that they were at a few years ago. So what that suggests is that there's a fragility in some of these emerging markets that I think has probably gone underappreciated for a while. When we look at the South African rand, again, the rand was down in a dynamic manner in here today. It is coming right towards this 14 level, and it's completely countermanded the little bit of strength that we saw last week. Well, 14 has been an area of support for the last 18 months, but really a clear downward dynamic against the dollar would be required to really question its potential for additional upside here. Well, when we look at the commodity-related markets, even in a currency or in a nominal currency basis, the all share in South Africa is looking a little bit susceptible to further downside in here right now. Then when we look at the FTSE 350 mining index, well, then we can see, for example, that it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Now, there is, I think, the argument that would support the outlook for commodities is twofold. One is that oil prices are still very firm, and a rising oil price increases the cost of production for just about all commodities. So that should help to support industrial metal prices, and there the LME Metals Index is right in the region of the trend mean. Of course, it is going to have to continue to find support in the region of the trend mean, both for the FTSE 350 mining index and the ASX 300 resources index has demonstrated relative strength over the course of the last few weeks because the Aussie dollar has been weaker. That's not to say that the pound hasn't also been weak, but this is now a downtrend for the Aussie dollar. And if what it suggests is that Australia really would prefer to have a weaker currency. And there is also the point that interest rates are low and that there is doesn't seem to be any urgency to raise interest rates, and that the interest rate differential over the USA has contracted to nothing at all. So that suggests that the Australian dollar is going to be going lower from here. If we do start to see oil prices moving higher, then that should help to support not just the industrial metals, but if we look at the outlook for the grains, then what we've certainly seen is that the grain market has been in really has been subject to some quite acute selling pressure. And most particularly corn and soybeans. When we look at the soybean market, then it is back below 1,000 and in a dynamic manner. It had bounced last week, but it's giving up that bounce in here this week. It's coming down towards the lower side of the range. It's already approximating at the lows that we saw in 2008. And so far, there isn't a great deal of evidence that support has been found. What I find quite interesting is that if we look at UK wheat, we get a very different picture. This is not just because of the UK, of the weakness of the pound, but rather specifically about the UK wheat crop. So what that also tells us is that there are individual stories in the commodity markets that can still support a bullish environment, but that the most liquid of the commodities are those that are being used by funds to express a view on the trade war situation, on the potential for rising interest rates, and the underperformance of emerging markets. That is what is weighing, for example, on the US wheat contracts. But even here, wheat is demonstrating relative strength compared to corn and soybeans, and wheat is now at it's below $5, but it is pausing in the region of the trend mean. And if it's going to find support, well, then wheat is probably the commodity most likely to demonstrate continued relative strength in this particular environment. So I think if we try and loop it together, we're still in a corrective phase. But we are at rather key levels, and the underperformance of the banking sector is perhaps the most notable feature that we have right now. Also, of course, we still have the yield curve is continuing to contract. And I think it is also worth highlighting that Bitcoin is back testing the 6,000 level, and the last dynamic move was on the downside. When we look at this on a logarithmic scale chart over the last few years, there is nothing sacrosanct about 6,000, and there is ample potential for this price to come significantly lower from here. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.